This podcast brought to you by Peterson Auto Group. With 5 stores and 10 brands and more than 1,800 new and used vehicles to choose from, Peterson Auto Group likely has your perfect car.
Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Tuesday, where we discuss the Olympic sports at Boise State. Now here are Paul J. Schneider, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, Paul J., Bob, and Chris. And we have a special guest on the KBOI live line. That's Dan Potter, the Boise State men's golf coach. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you? You got a big event coming up, of course, starting Friday in Tucson, the Mountain West Championships.
That's correct. It's I don't expect it to look anything like it does today down in Tucson when we get there, and that's not a bad thing.
Now, Dan, I guess this is the same course that you guys have played the last couple of years, the Mountain West, correct?
Correct.
And how? Tell us a little bit about how it plays and how maybe for the guys that have played before, how it's an advantage going back to the same course.
You know, we've actually just got one guy in our lineup that's been there before. That's Kyle Mitsunaga, who's a senior from right here in Boise. And he's played it well before. And the course in Tucson is actually fairly tame from tee to green. It's a pretty flat course. There's a couple really hard holes, and it's just some critical shots off of the tee. But the greens are usually in fantastic shape. There was a Champions Tour event that just took place there a couple weeks ago, so they get it in nearly perfect shape for the Champions Tour, and we're the beneficiaries of getting to come and play it a couple weeks later because the greens will be perfect, and it's a course where there are a lot of birdies will be made. You know, like I said, there's a couple really critical shots in certain holes, and you can get some wind in the afternoons. And if the wind picks up, then you know that'll kind of separate the scoring. But in general, you know, if guys are making putts, they're going to have a lot of birdie chances and get a lot of birdie chances on really good smooth greens. You know, we expect the scores to be under par, which they have been every year.
Yeah, you shot in your last event, the final round of the Ping Cougar Classic, a 3 over 291 in the final round to finish ninth with a 10 over score of 874. Yep. Who played well for you?
You know, so Kyle played well in that tournament. He had a 68 in the first round. He backed up a little bit the second two rounds on that final round. Brian Humphreys played solid. He's had a really good year for us all year as a freshman, but he had a 200 par 70 in the final round at BYU. And then Mason Schultz is another freshman that had a really good tournament going for three rounds. He kind of had a hiccup on the back nine there at BYU, made a triple bogey, just kind of had a fluke deal happen on one of the greens that cost him. But so he backed up a little bit, but he was well under. I think he was in third place for the tournament before that happened, and so we've got three freshmen that are headed with us to Tucson that have all done a really nice job for us all year, and it's somewhat remarkable to have three freshmen as the year goes on. It gets long, and this will be the 13th tournament that we've traveled to this year. And they're balancing school and being a freshman in college with all that travel and competing, and they've done just a really good job, and they're good players. You know, there's a reason that they're in the lineup. They're all really good players. So
it's Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI along with Chris and Paul J. I'm Bob Beeler. Dan Potter joining us on the phone, the head coach of the men's golf team at Boise State. Dan, you mentioned three freshmen that have been such a vital part of this team this year. What do you do with a freshman team, a team that has a lot of freshmen when you're coming down to the conference tournament? Is there something different about this tournament than the other 12 that you've played in?
You know, there definitely is. And if anything, you want them to embrace that and kind of embrace the challenge and maybe a little bit of extra nerves and that different feeling. And but these guys are competitors, and Bob, and you know, that's what they play for. They want to be in big events that that feel, you know, more meaningful. And so I think we embrace that at the outset, and then kind of realize that you know, once you've acknowledged that, and maybe there's a different energy or a different sense of nervousness, then you just got to go hit your shots. And you know, the golf course doesn't know the difference, the ball doesn't know the difference, and so then you need to relax and get back in that game mode and do your thing. And like I said, they're just because they're freshmen doesn't mean they don't have experience in these types of events. They all do. And so I'm excited for them. You know, this is where they want to be, and these guys are excited to, you know, try to be as competitive as any teams have been at Boise State in their time here, and this is how they do it.
All right, we're talking with Boise State men's golf coach Dan Potter, KBOI News Time, 8:45.
Now back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
All right, so we're back. Paul J. Chris, Bob Beeler, Dan Potter, head golf coach at Boise State.
And Dan, just looking at the teams in the Mountain West this year, 35 golfers have averaged between 70 and 73 for the scores. It looks like all the teams are bunched except UNLV. Looks like they've got a better average score. Is UNLV the favorite in this thing?
They are. They won it last year, and they've had a really good season. They started the season with good players, you know, on their roster. I think they've got the returning player of the year in the conference, as well as the young man that was the freshman of the year in the conference for them. And their season is just kind of, you know, they started off well, and they've just kind of gotten better and better as the year's gone on. So I'm sure that that they have high expectations, and I think everybody would say that they're the favorite going in.
But then looking at the individuals, as I mentioned, there's 35 golfers that have averaged between 70 and 73. One of them is Brian Humphries. For the individual title, does it look tight?
Yeah. You know, like I said, it's a golf course that there's a lot of players that will score well on, and if we don't get wind, then it's going to be a matter of, you know, who's sharpest with their wedges and who can make the putts. And I would expect Brian Humphries, if he's on his game, to be right in the mix. He showed that, you know, when he gets around the lead, that he can finish the deal. This year he's got two wins. And like you said, there's a lot of great players that'll tee it up. And we've got a couple of them on our team, so that's exciting.
Golf is one of those sports, so it's you against the course, right? And basically, one of the things that I would think would maybe give Vegas or somebody else a slight advantage is the fact that your young guys, only one of them, Moot's the only one who's seen the course down there.
Yep. Kyle has seen the course one time. The other guys, it'll be the first time around it, but luckily, it's a course that, you know, every course is different in its characteristics, and some courses it helps to, you know, have played it a bunch of times to kind of get your sight lines off of certain tees or no tendencies on certain shots where you want to leave it. This course, fortunately for guys seeing it for the first time, is fairly straightforward. You know, they're going to have a lot of you know, pretty easy looking shots that are right out in front of them and pretty self-explanatory. And, you know, sometimes that's a good thing, you know, not having seen the course and you don't go in with a lot of expectations. I think a lot of guys returning will, you know, maybe be a little bit panicked if they're not making a bunch of birdies right out of the gates. Whereas our guys will, you know, hopefully just kind of take it as it comes. It's a 3-round tournament and we don't add them all up until the very end. So,
do the warm weather schools have an advantage?
You know, in a winter like this, Paul, I mean, it's we did a lot of practicing indoors. You know, and this is my third year at Boise State. It's the first year where the weather has been this much of a factor in kind of the start of our spring season. But our guys handled it well. I mean, we won a tournament, as you saw there, at the end of February, and we really hadn't played much golf outside other than at the two previous tournaments when we went down to Long Beach and won the first tournament that the team had won in like 5 years. So yeah, it's a little bit of a disadvantage, but at this point, you know, we've been playing outside for the last, you know, couple months, and our guys are sharp. I would say, if anything, it's, you know, like I said, we've got young guys in our lineup, and the season gets long. You know, it's their first time playing a full college golf season. They all compete and play a bunch during the summer. But our guys have kind of, you know, I think felt some of those growing pains, and just by the time spring break rolled around, our guys looked like they were ready for a break, and they took one, and we came back, and we weren't quite as sharp as we had looked, ironically, coming out of the winter. And so that told me that, you know, we had young guys, and the season was getting long and going to school and stuff like that. So they'll adjust to that, but we've had a chance to get a nice breather. They're all, you know, look forward to this championship all year long, and I expect them to be ready to roll.
Dan, as we finish up, what's at stake? Winner goes to the NCAA tournament. What about individuals? How does that work?
So the winner of our conference championship will go to the NC2A regional. So there's six regional sites around the country, and you got to get to nationals via the regionals. So we would have to win down in Tucson in order to advance to the regionals. And you know, Brian Humphries has had the type of season where, if he plays a great tournament down in Tucson, that he could be in the mix to head to regionals as an individual.
All right, Coach, thanks, and best of luck coming up for the big conference tournament. Good luck.
Appreciate it, gentlemen.
All right,
Thank you.
Potter, head golf coach of Boise State. It's 8:52.
Now back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
Former Boise State golfer Graham DeLette had a great Heritage Classic, except for one hole. Got a triple bogey on the ninth, I think. Eighth or ninth on the last round, and lost by three of those three strokes.
It's amazing, and that's probably going to be the difference in the Mountain West for either the men or the women. You play 3 days, a lot of good golfers. Women's team right now has Dana Clary amongst the leaders. She shot a 100 par yesterday in the first round down at Rancho Mirage, California. That puts her in a tie for fourth. That's three strokes off the lead. And then Shaney Remy, nice performance in the all-around, a 39.3625. Best all-around score ever for a Boise State gymnast at the national meet.
Finished 19th, I believe, somewhere.
Yeah.
And the Boise State women are 9th, 308, 7th. They're in 7th place, so.
And you look at it, the top three have kind of separated themselves on the women's golf tournament. 1 under for San Diego State, UNLV, New Mexico, and then it jumps to 4, 9, 16, and then a couple teams in the 20s.
See, I'm sticking to my warm weather thing there.
It helps.
Yeah.
I think it helps more, Paul.
Santa Barbara, UNLV,
San Diego, exactly.
In the recruiting, I think. You know, you're going to get, I mean, Dan Potter was right.
Yeah.
This is the worst winter.
Oh,
I've been here 9 years. More snow this year than the other eight for me combined.
You see, I mean,
We're getting rain today. I mean,
I saw a shot yesterday of the golf course at Sun Valley.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be 2 feet of snow on it still. It's amazing.
Better have colored balls.
No question. I'm not going outside until it gets a lot warmer than it is now.
Doesn't matter what color they are if they're buried in the snow.
That's true.
So, the track and field, they're mixing and matching, man. They really go at it in a different but very successful fashion.
They've done quite well. And then coming up next weekend, we've got the Mountain West Men's Tennis Championships coming up Friday, Saturday, Sunday next week out at the Appleton Courts. Hopefully better weather than we have today.
Yeah, been a disappointing year for those guys. Talked with Greg Patton the other day. He's ready. He says, we're so close. We're so close.
Well, he won it a couple years ago when they were seated in the middle. So I'm not going to write them off.
No, not yet. It's 8:56, Idaho Talks Live, coming up after a news break at the top of the hour.
K.
KBOI.
If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Right. Top of the morning, Paul, Jay, and Chris, Todd with 1D. Everybody's eating bacon in here this morning.
That was right.
Program director David Allen.
Exactly.
Went to the KBOI business breakfast and brought us back bacon.
Yeah, yesterday we kept talking about, hey, why don't you bring us some bacon back? You know, we've been saying that forever. And so yesterday he said he would, and today he did.
He did.
I need to start going to. Well, they're always on Tuesday, and we're always working here.
Mm-hmm.
But. Good idea. I mean, you get a free breakfast at these business breakfasts, and you know, you hear a good talk, and usually people just have a pretty good time in the morning. And the breakfast is free, by the way.
Yeah.
And they have good bacon. I mean, you've had bad bacon. This isn't bad bacon. This is good bacon.
True.
Yeah.
All right. You saw the show of might, if you will, by North Korea the other day,
mm-hmm.
where they had like...
Well, they rolled out
15,000-20,000 soldiers, right?
Yeah, and they rolled out pretty much everything they have militarily.
Every rocket, every bomb,
and
yeah.
But of course, there were people who said that some of those missiles were just tubes.
Oh yeah, and I mean everybody was color coordinated. And
yeah,
they were doing that goose step thing.
Yeah.
What a great time to attack, right? no,
oh, right.
Seriously.
Well, it's like it would be like Pearl Harbor, you know, where they had so many ships that were in the harbor at
What'd
that time.
What'd they call it? They called it, there was a name for it, for when they have ships like that many of them.
Yeah, Mistake, I think, was
yeah,
one of
Mistake
them.
Yeah, Mistake is one of them. But
exactly.
Every time I see something like that, I'm going, fool?
Yeah.
You're putting everybody out there. What are these guys going to do? Shoot down bombers
and at the same time
35,000 feet with rifles.
At the same time that was going on, they were doing another missile test, and this one blew up just as it was leaving the launch pad.
They need like a cartoon sound effect.
There's been a rumor going around, but I think maybe it's just speculation. Nobody has any proof, but the rumor was that the United States has hacked into North Korea. And that they were the ones who, or that we, I guess, were the ones who made the missile blow up as it left the launch pad. But nobody knows that for sure. I mean, North Korea's had plenty of failed tests on their own, I think.
Isn't that funny, though? All right, shift into reverse.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Take a sharp left turn, and we're good.
All right. Now, did you see all the medals on the older guys? I think Todd and I were commenting on it. Every guy had like 40 medals.
Wow. And they haven't been in any
wars.
Exactly. They haven't been in any wars. Maybe that's how many assassination attempts they've all survived.
Yeah. I mean,
were they cousins of his? Because that would be bad.
Yeah. I'm not sure where I'm trying to look, find out where they all the medals came from.
Yeah.
It says, basically on Fox's website, that they're just trying to send a message.
Yeah.
That the medals don't really mean anything except supposed to scare us.
Well, yeah. Or you get one for, you know, every 6 months or something.
Yeah. Maybe every 10,000 steps.
It'd be weird to go to Kim Jong-un's family reunion. I mean, you know, like half of it would just be a big in memoriam segment.
Yeah. And would you eat anything?
Oh, no. I would just drop in as long as I
thought I
could get away alive with.
Champagne, sir? No, thanks.
Well, not today.
Yeah. Suntan lotion? No, thanks.
Korean food? Well, yeah, okay. I'll take some of that.
Yeah, maybe. All right. We're going to talk... about what President Trump's going to be doing a little bit later on today.
Mm-hmm.
Signing a double-barreled executive order that will clamp down on guest worker visas and require agencies to buy more goods and services from U.S. companies and workers.
Which is interesting. I mean, he's
called Buy American, Hire American.
I think most of the companies that he's run, you know, have bought materials and things from overseas. Because, of course, generally when people buy, especially in bulk, they try to buy as cheaply as possible.
And his clothing line, his neckties, et cetera, come from Taiwan.
Yeah,
right?
I appreciate what he's doing.
Yeah.
But the fact is, I mean, yes, it could build up the economy a little bit, but there will be an awful lot of people who will hike up their prices because they have to buy local. You know, I mean, I'm still in favor of buying American.
Yeah, people have said that for a long time. It'll be interesting to see how much of that happens.
Yeah.
Because they've been saying that.
Do you agree with him signing this, or do you think that, you know, if when you're in business, you know, whether you buy American or not should be voluntary?
I kind of agree with the latter. I kind of think that if somebody else can make a product, and there are ways of controlling it. You can raise tariffs and do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you can make us competitive in that way. But remember when Japanese cars first started to become players.
Yeah.
You know, when Toyota and Honda and Datsun.
Kind of late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, Nissan, all of these guys started coming in, and their cars were $12,000, $15,000 cheaper than U.S. cars.
Yeah.
Are they now?
Well, when they first came out, I mean, you could, if you had about $2,000, you could go down and get a subcompact.
Now they're...
Well, you still can, but it's one that's got 100,000 miles on it.
Now they're the same price?
Pretty much.
Or more expensive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they also started making them larger a long time ago.
Yeah. But the Kia, Hyundai, people like that have come in, and in what, 8 years? 7, 8 years? Because I had a Hyundai 2 cars ago, and it was a pretty nice car, but it, like you said, it was small.
Yeah.
Small. It was very small, but... Now it's...
That used to be the whole point of getting a Japanese car.
Yeah.
In the early 70s, a lot of people bought...
Economy, baby!
Toyotas and Datsuns and Mazdas and whatnot, and, you know, Subarus, because they got better gas mileage, and we were in the middle of what was supposed to be an energy crisis. I mean, there was an embargo in the Middle East, but, you know, an energy crisis can be organic or not.
Yeah, it's all manipulated, you know that.
I know.
KBOI News Time, 9:14.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
President Trump will sign a double-barreled executive order today that will clamp down on guest worker visas and require agencies to buy more goods and services from U.S. companies and workers.
Now, clamp down would probably just mean reduce the number of, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
KBOI rewards code is BACON, B-A-C-O-N. Go to 670KBOI.com, enter BACON, and earn today's 5,000 rewards points.
You know, everybody has had campaigns about buying American. You know, they put out a...
Well, this was one of his big things, linchpins.
Right, but instead of just running commercials encouraging everybody to buy American and hire American, he's making it an executive order.
Yep. He'll sign the so-called Buy American, Hire American executive order during a visit to Snap-on Tools. Who owns them? In Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Two senior administration officials... who briefed reporters on the order on Monday, said that the official spoke on condition they not be identified because the cabinet-level officials who could discuss the matter on the record were unavailable.
Does that ever bother you?
What's that?
That every other story you read that comes out of Washington...
An unnamed source.
Well, somebody told the reporter all about it, who will not be named because they have to be anonymous, because apparently part of their job is not telling reporters about this stuff.
Yeah. By combining aspects of immigration policy with federal procurement regulations, Trump is using executive action to advance his philosophy of economic nationalism without waiting for action from Congress. Well, Trump has proven, if nothing else, in the first 100 and whatever days... They ain't waiting for anybody.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't seem to like to waste time.
Like many of his previous executive orders, the order will largely call on cabinet secretaries to fill in the details, with reports and recommendations about what the administration can legally do.
So it sounds like
he gives you bullet points.
Exactly. It sounds like the executive order is simply to start working on this.
Right.
And then from then, the heads of each of the agencies, the cabinet members have to come up with the details and figure out whether something can legally, something can pass Supreme Court muster.
You can do this, you can't do that.
Exactly.
You can do this,
yeah.
Specifically targeted, the H-1B visa program that allows 85,000 foreign workers into the U.S. Each year to take specific high-skilled jobs.
Those are supposed to be the people who come into this country because we don't have enough people who are skilled at a particular profession.
Right.
Despite the fact that we have, 320 million people.
The program is popular with the information tech industry, which Trump has accused of importing low-wage workers to take jobs from young college-trained Americans. Not sure that's true, but he's doing what he thinks is right, I guess. He cites false job data while touting his America First domestic plan. Hiring slowed down. Some economists think that's actually happening. The executive order will stop short of the 1 to 2 year moratorium on new skilled worker visas, which Trump had called for during the campaign.
Okay, so it won't be slamming the door shut.
Nope.
It'll just be, kind of closing it part way.
Yeah, leaving a crack open. It comes too late to have a direct effect on this year's visa season, which opens on April 3rd. Did you know there was a visa season?
I did not. There could even be a MasterCard season for all I know. I don't know anything about it.
Instead, the executive order will look for administrative changes, including an overhaul of the lottery system, which is used to determine which companies can sponsor the visas, programs.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
When you hear the word overhaul the lottery system, does that make you think that it will no longer be just drawing lots, but instead they'll choose someone?
If you overhaul it, by definition, right, and that's where you're going with this.
I think so.
By definition,
it would no longer be a lottery.
Right. It would be an appointment situation. Other visa programs will not be affected.
And then at that point, it's open to having preferred customers or preferred businesses that are allowed to do this.
Yeah. The Buy American portion of the order will tighten the waivers and exemptions that agencies use to get around procurement laws that favor American-made goods and require agency heads to sign off on those waivers. It will require agencies to consider whether foreign governments are using unfair trade practices against us when considering the lowest responsible bidder. And it includes language requiring transportation projects to use steel melted and poured in the United States.
Yeah. There are some natural resources in the world that aren't in North America or aren't in the United States. And so we do have to get some things from other countries. But I guess what Trump here is saying is if you have a choice and it's really not that much of a difference in price, in other words, you're not paying three times as much for the American product as you would for a product from overseas, then, do as much as you possibly can to centralize everything and so we can be a little more self-contained than we currently are.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. We've been doing just the opposite for the last 50 years.
Yeah. All right, here's Trump about an hour ago.
Okay.
Any second now.
Making good on his America First ideology, President Donald Trump is adding further restrictions to guest worker visas. Dubbed Buy American, Hire American, Trump's latest executive order will target the H-1B visa program, which allows 85,000 highly skilled workers to come to the U.S., oftentimes for the tech sector. Apple, Google, and Facebook take advantage of that program, but Trump calls it fraud and abuse in the immigration system as outsourcing firms exploit the program. Trump argues the program is actually used to fill low-level positions, which, quote, take jobs from young college-trained Americans. Trump will look to overhaul the program's lottery system, which determines which companies can sponsor the visas, and that's already producing results. Workplaces anticipating a more targeted approach by the Trump administration cut back the number of applicants this year for the first time in 5 years.
All right, that's from USA Today. Was mislabeled. That's great. KBOI News Time, 9:26.
You're listening to Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
All right, so we are back. KBOI News Time, 9:37. Been talking about the president is expected to sign a double-edged bill today.
Well, he's going to Wisconsin, and it's an order that, you know, as you said during the last segment, it's supposed to get rid of abuses in the visa program because, you know, it was meant to say if you have a job that you can't find an American to do, and there is somebody available who's not necessarily American, you can, you know, get them one of these visas and they can do the job for you. However, instead of the highly skilled people, apparently a lot of companies have simply been recruiting from overseas people who will work as cheaply as possible, much more cheaply than Americans will.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's trying to prevent this. I don't know. I mean, it's undoubtedly going to make prices go up for the average person, but I don't know what it'll do to the economy necessarily.
Yeah, it could have an effect.
Well, the idea is to keep more American money in America.
True. Let's go to Richard Boise on the phones. Rich, good morning.
Well, I'll give you an example of what has happened to tell you what's going to happen with this stuff. We put a tariff on Japanese cars in the 70s. The Japanese companies said, well, since our cars are going to cost more money, let's just make better cars. The American company said, whoopee, we can charge more money for our cars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's as far as, you know, encouraging these places to buy American. Price, the American, they'll raise prices so much it'll just get too expensive. And these heads of these departments, they've got limited budgets. They're going to try to buy. But that visa program is along the same lines. We started giving money to all these grants to these universities. So we came out with all these for-profit universities, who most of them are scam. I mean, in America, we seem to think it's our duty to try to screw the government out as much money as we can. You know, the German manufacturers, they work with the German government to make Germany great. They really do. And that, just like you said, that visa program, they're doing the same thing. They gave them an opportunity for high-skilled help, and they just do it to improve their bottom line. And I doubt if they're going to restrict them much enough to do much about what they're doing, because they are profit motive. They're not American.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're publicly traded, you have an obligation to do things as cheaply as possible.
Yes, you know, and but you know, the German companies kind of don't. They have programs where they train, and then they're manufacturing. The government helps train people for high tech jobs,
mm-hmm.
and they just don't go out there and try to rip the government off for all the money they can. They actually train all these people, and that's why Germany still has 30% of its economy in manufacturing, because they just started manufacturing more and more expensive stuff that require higher skilled workers. I mean, I really think it's just that kind of the attitude of American companies is that if you could find some sort of a government grant, go in there and try to rip off the government as much as I've seen it happen over and over with energy conservation, all kinds of stuff. But I don't really think it's going to make a hell of a lot of difference.
And essentially, the tech industry has kind of said as a whole that what they don't like is when students come to the United States to go to college from some other country and then get a high-tech degree and then go back to their country, which was their plan all along. But
see, that was popular when I was in school.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s and 70s,
mm-hmm.
A lot of guys would come from foreign countries. When I was at the University of Idaho, there were, I don't know, in the dorm at any time, maybe 8 to 10.
Well, yeah, and it was similar when I was at Boise State. That was in the early to mid 80s. Mm-hmm. There were guys in the dorms that were from Pakistan and Indonesia, yep. And a couple guys from Norway, and they all came to the United States to get basically an American education or American style education, and a few of them stayed, but most of them did go back to their homes. But that's just. That's kind of something we offer. You know, that's why you have to pay for your education instead of getting everything free, is that way people can come from all over the world that aren't necessarily U.S. citizens.
Yep. And apparently that's the way Mr. Trump wants to get things done. It'll be interesting.
You know, and it's probably bad for the American tech industry, but the people whose goal it is, you know, to make the entire world, I guess, at least middle class, they think it's a good idea because these people take these, you know, these tech skills back to a country that has no tech skills, and they do something.
Yeah, that's true.
However,
a lot of people who complain.
However, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all that he would sign this because he has said all along, America first.
Yep.
In other words, let's take care of our own, and then we'll take care of everybody else, if necessary, or they can take care of themselves.
Yep. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about conservatives on college campuses. They want to make America's campuses great again. We'll be back. It's 9:43.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 1, listen to Savage on 670 KBOI.
KBOI news time. My tongue fell asleep there. 9:47. Standing room only is Lauren Cooley. Stepped in front of a classroom of college Republicans on a recent Saturday afternoon at UCF, University of Central Florida's main campus.
Mm-hmm.
The 24-year-old campus organizer and University of Miami grad student was kicking off her Make Campus Great Again speaking tour, which is an effort to motivate conservative students to embrace political action. I know you guys worked really, really hard to make America great, and we won. That's awesome, she told a crowd of students in navy blazers and brogues, chic sheath dresses and patent leather pumps, and a few red Make America Great Again hats. Now Trump's in his first 100 days. What can we do to help the new administration move forward? That's her question. She's on a tour, a countrywide tour.
Mm-hmm.
During the 2016 election, she traveled around Florida, training activists and knocking on dorm room doors to register student voters. She had founded a political action committee that year called Campus Red and appeared as guest representing millennial conservatives on outlets such as Fusion TV and One American News Network. And I must admit, I haven't heard of either one of those.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, nationwide there are what now? Or not nationwide, but worldwide, there are about 120 news networks all trying to compete with, you know, CNN and Fox News and MSNBC and CNBC and Bloomberg.
Yeah. So
but they haven't
going.
Made the top yeah. 10 yet. Isn't that interesting? I mean, when you talk about, if you said there is a female college student who is going door to door to try to get people to be activists.
Politically.
I think the first thing you'd think is, it must be a Democrat.
No question.
And yet, that's not the case.
Nope. She continues to write for right-leaning media and to speak on conservative television and radio. She's usually far the youngest panelist and the only woman in a recent appearance on the Glenn Beck program. These angry old 42 angry old white men and her. Cooley describes herself as a conservative first, a Republican second. She said she believes there are others like her on college campuses, students who fall between the left and alt-right who are looking for their people.
Yeah.
And their people are hard to find.
A good place to start might be the business building.
No question. With millennial and Generation X adults poised to outnumber baby boomers in 2020, Cooley sees a niche market waiting to be tapped on college campuses. From 2012 to 2016, The 18-29 vote held steady in Florida, while the Democratic advantage declined by 12 points from President Obama to Hillary Clinton. Trump performed better than Matt Romney. That would be Mitt. Mitt Romney, according to exit poll data. There's this big narrative that all young people are liberal, and they're always going to vote Democrat or left, Cooley said.
Well, when the,
now,
when,
I think
when the news
up in Idaho, we don't believe that.
When the news goes to a college campus and there's a rally or something, 99% of the time you see it on television, it's going to be a liberal rally. That's just kind of what happens on college campuses.
True.
However, they're not the only people on college campuses.
That's what she's saying. She's saying
they might be the noisiest.
Yep.
But yeah, there are a lot of conservatives. I mean, and I mentioned the business building because you end up with a lot of business majors who do not want to enter the business world when it's almost impossible to make a living or make a dollar. And so they remain conservative, I think, through their college careers and on into adulthood.
It's funny how people I've known have morphed from fairly leftist, ban the bomb stuff wearing college students.
And then they bought something.
And then they bought something.
And then they decided, hey, I think I'd like to keep what I worked for and bought.
Then they paid for their kids' college education and did this and did that. And now they don't feel so good when they see people getting free college educations, getting student loans forgiven, getting all of that, which they had to pay, and they did because it was part of what they're supposed to do. They morph over a little bit more conservative.
Well, and that's always been kind of a conservative point of view, is that what happens to me is my responsibility, not yours and not everybody else's. And by the way, you don't need to keep tabs on this and this and this because I keep tabs on those things for myself. Thank you.
People get motivated when they get outraged.
That's
true.
Morton
Blackwell, founder of Conservative Incubator, the Leadership Institute, which Cooley credits with making her the activist she is today. There's more conservative student activism going on because leftist activism is so outrageous. Though still a minority presence on campus activism, some conservative youth groups say they've experienced a big surge in interest since the presidential election.
Biggest thing we saw on TV Saturday, if you were watching the news, you saw people protesting, not in enormous numbers. I mean, there may have been tens of thousands nationwide.
Sure.
But they were gathering at state capitals and places like that. They did it here in Boise. There were about 200, I guess. But they are protesting the fact that Trump hasn't released his tax returns to the public. And in the middle of that, there was also a Patriots Day rally, held more by the right down in Berkeley. Now, you might say to yourself, why would you hold any kind of a right-wing rally in Berkeley? Well, it was to show them that they're not afraid of the people in Berkeley who are, farther left than just about anybody you've ever met. However, what happened is, and it was confusing the way they were reporting it on TV, because you saw a brawl going on and there were people who were completely dressed in black and they were, hitting people with sticks and they brought pipes and things like that. And it was just a huge fight. And I think what a lot of people didn't get is the people that showed up with their faces covered in black were on the left, not the right.
Yeah.
These were not Trump supporters that were showing up to bash these people that were protesting. This was this was kind of a pro-America, pro-Trump rally, and these were people who showed up to bash those people.
Yeah. All right, breaking news coming right now. The Facebook murder suspect has been found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound in Pennsylvania. Killed himself after a car chase near Erie, Pennsylvania, and is dead.
Oh, so they had caught up with him and knew where he was, and he just gave up at some point.
Yep. He was stopped in Pennsylvania, near Erie, with a traffic stop. They recognized him. And
they'd shown pictures of the car on television for a couple of days, and he was in the same one.
Apparently the same car. So Mr. Stevens, the Facebook murder suspect, has been found dead. Details to come on news at the top of the hour. And we'll see you tomorrow. It'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
all the fallout from this. 9:56.